I have an office on the kind of the west side of the UW-Madison campus. And yesterday, I had a meeting across campus where I had to walk over the large hill behind Agriculture Hall. And as I walk over that, and I've walked over that hill many, many a time to go to a meeting in Bascom Hall, I stopped and paused at the bird effigy. It is, I believe, the wingspan is something like 136 feet, and the body of the bird effigy is around 50, if I'm not mistaken. Our guest can tell me for sure, because he's Bob Birmingham, spent 15 years as the Wisconsin State Archaeologist. He now teaches at UW-Waukesha, writes from his home in Madison, and he is the author of a new book out, Spirits of Earth, The Effigy Mound Landscape of Madison and the Four Lakes. And it's a remarkable book. It's published by the University of Wisconsin Press. And I'm really pleased to have him with us today to talk about effigy mounds and maybe zero in on his book, The Effigy Mounds of the Madison Area, and certainly take your questions as well as we move along today. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. We'd love to hear from you. And Bob Birmingham, welcome back. Nice to have you with us.
A pleasure to be here.
I really enjoyed it. And that that bird effigy is really striking.
Are you talking about the one on Observatory Hill?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, it is striking, and it is an example of many mounds that were, in fact, once found throughout the University of Wisconsin campus. Many are preserved today, of course, and throughout the Lake Mendota area and stretching throughout all of the Four Lakes area. In fact, if you can imagine this, just about every hill, like the one that you're walking over, at one time was covered with earthen mounds in the shape of animals, birds, familiar animals to us, and other creatures that were sort of invisible in nature, but were very powerful spirit beings for the Indian people who made them.
Yeah. And that's one of the reasons, I guess, that we speculate that these earthen mounds were made for spiritual reasons.
Exactly. Many of the mound forms are identical, in fact, to principal spirit beings and even the clan ancestors of modern Native peoples. So we know what these are and what they represent. To Indian people and had represented to Indian people. And what comes out of that is these are the equivalent of putting the principles of a great religion on the surface of the ground in vast areas.
And in some cases, not all, but in some cases, these mounds served as burial sites for.
That's correct. Most of them also are burial mounds. Yeah. But as I discuss in my book and some earlier works, it doesn't seem that death itself was the stimulator for the construction. That is, it was appropriate to bury people in these mounds. It was appropriate, mm-hmm. but it wasn't necessary given the rituals and ceremonies that were going on. And that's the fascinating part of that, is that burials are an appropriate part of this great ceremonial construction. But it's obviously much more involved than simply putting up quaint tombstones.
Yeah. What were, why was the Madison area, I think the Madison area was a very fertile area, you might, if that's a good way to say it, yep. for effigy mounds.
Well, the Madison area, the focus of my book is the Madison area, and the reason being is that there were in fact, an extraordinary number of mounds built in this area at about 100 locations, but well over 1,100 mounds, individual mounds stretching out all along the lakes. It was, in fact, a center of mound building. There were other centers that stretched from Lake Michigan right to the eastern part of Iowa, and then south from central Wisconsin down into northern Illinois. I selected the Madison area to talk about because they're so well documented. Given the university and Madison being Madison, people noticed this a long time ago and made an extraordinary number of maps and so on. But this is literally in the center of the effigy mound building area. That is, the people at the time made these mounds in great numbers in a specific region of North America, in the world, in fact. And that is southern Wisconsin. Madison literally is in the heart. As I point out in a book, it is though it's the ancient capital, appropriately, of the effigy mound building people. And significantly, there are differences in the types of mounds throughout the effigy mound area. Some focus on some forms more than others. But in the Madison area, it all comes together. And we have the best representation of the types of forms found during the period. So I don't know if it was in their minds that they were in a capital, but it certainly metaphorically appears to be the capital of the effigy mound culture.
Andy in Astolan, we will turn to you. Hi, Andy. Thank you for calling.
Sure. Thanks for taking my call. I live in Astolan, and as you know, there's plenty of mounds in our area. And I was wondering if you could tell me if there's any relation between the Astolan people and the legend of the pyramid submerged under Rock Lake.
No relationship that we can find. I'm very dubious about whether or not there are, in fact, any human construction things in Rock Lake itself. We've been down looking at it. So I think that's more of a legend more than anything else. The real important place there is, of course, Astolan itself. And Astolan represented an intrusion of a new, very complex society coming from the south. And in fact, Astolan is the northernmost outpost of this very complex society we call Mississippians. What's interesting is that the intrusion or the expansion of this culture occurred during the same time that the people were building effigy mounds. And very shortly after that, the people who were building, the locals building effigy mounds, which we call woodland culture, stopped. Mm-hmm. We see an end to that. And there certainly seems to be a correlation between those two events, although there is one other correlation I could talk about later. So we have these Mississippians coming in and building large platform mounds and articulating in some fashion with these woodland peoples. In some cases, they seem to be allies at Astolan itself. We have two different types of pottery, Mississippian and the people, woodland people. And at Astolan, right across the main part of the village, is in fact an extraordinary effigy mound, indicating that this had also been a place that had been used by the woodland people. In other cases, they may have been fighting. For example, here in the Madison area, as I describe in my book, we can find a little evidence of Astolan and that culture here in Madison, even though it's 30 miles away.
Yeah. You know?
Where we do have is at least one village that was occupied by ostensibly the effigy mound builders that is heavily fortified. So we may be seeing some very exciting things happened there. But I'm very dubious about whether a Rock Lake has any anything that relates to what we're talking about.
All right. Thanks for calling, Andy. Appreciate it. Carlene in Brooklyn, your turn. Hi, Carlene.
Hi there. I want to say a couple things about effigy mounds. As a fourth grade social studies teacher, when I did that, I took my students to Esteland and then also to a park in the eastern part of the state that's in the edge of a farmer's field, viewing on a self-guided tour of effigy mounds, as well as the mounds here in the Madison area and to Effigy Mound State Park over in Iowa. It was quite fascinating, and the kids really enjoyed all of that. But my question specifically is not about effigy mounds. My husband and I have been finding spear points and very small arrowhead points around the pond that's behind our house. We live between Oregon and Brooklyn, south of Madison. And we'd like to have these, we'd like to know something about them, and don't quite know how to do that. I wondered if you could help us with that.
Oh, sure.
And you know what? We'll do that. But we need to take a quick look at the news and weather and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Net. As a matter of fact, I have some arrowheads that my mother found that I wanted to ask about, too, and I forgot to bring them with me today. But I'm sure Bob Birmingham will have some answers for you, Carlene, and answers to your questions, too, as we visit with him. He'll be with us right up until 12:30 on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking about effigy mounds today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, I'm Larry Mueller, and really pleased to have Robert Birmingham with me again in the studio. Bob has a new book out called Spirits of Earth, The Effigy Mound Landscape of Madison and the Four Lakes. It's published by the University of Wisconsin Press. Really pleased to have him with us today. And certainly if you have questions about effigy mounds, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. And we had Carlene from Brooklyn on before our break, Bob, and she has collected or found some arrowheads in her backyard with her husband and wondering, how does she get them identified?
Oh, very easily. Call the Wisconsin Historical Society and talk to one of two people there. One is John Broyhan, who is the current state archaeologist, and this is basically a part of his job to, help the public recognize these things and obviously to preserve these places. John Broyhan is B-R-O-I-H-A-H-N, or Amy Rosebrow, who is also in the same office. So call one of those folks at the Wisconsin Historical Society, and I know they would be thrilled to help you identify those collections.
Excellent. Let's turn to Don in Warren, Wisconsin next. Hi, Don.
Hi. A comment and a question. While I was waiting online here, I remembered 35 years ago a local fellow who had spotted a lot of mounds told me where there was a eagle or a bird mound, and he told me exactly where it was, and I went, looked, and I couldn't find it, and suddenly I found I was standing on it.
Oh.
But there was also a man who told me that most of the arrow points were not arrowheads at all. They were knives. They were the blades of knives. And they would, as the knives got dull, they would flint knap them sharp again. And when they got too small or the neck broke off, they'd discard them. And that actually the arrowheads were the tiny little buggers that we call bird points. So there's no verification either way on this, but what's your take?
You're absolutely right. And what you heard is absolutely right. Most of what people call arrowheads are, in fact, not arrowheads. But our spear points, or in many, many cases, knives. And bow and arrow itself did not come into use here in the Midwest until 500 AD. For 11,000 years before that, people did not use bow and arrows. They used spear throwers or so on. And they made lots of other tools from chert and flint. And a lot of the tools that I've seen in collections, a lot of things that people call arrowheads, you're absolutely right, are knives. In fact, Larry and I were just exactly talking about the same thing
yes.
In the break, in which they were discarded because they would be used and chipped down and after a while thrown away because they're unusable. And people would make new knives and so on. Yes, indeed, arrow points are small, triangular shaped objects. Obviously, a 6 or 7 inch long stone point would not work very well on an arrow. You'd end up, with a point in your foot if you tried to shoot it. So the small arrows functioned obviously very well on an arrow because it's really velocity. That is at work here. So absolutely correct on that point.
Thank you for calling. Mark in Sheboygan Falls, on to you now. Hi, Mark.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I have, a couple of questions. My first one would be, what period of time were these mounds built? And has anybody actually given these the people that built them a name or a name.
Yep. These particular mounds were built between 700 AD and 1100 AD. Actually a very short time. And maybe even a shorter time than that. But certainly by 1100 AD, that custom had changed. And they were no longer building effigy mounds. Other types of mounds were built already nearly 1,000 years before this. Big conical mounds. These are tombs, large tombs. But the time of the effigy mound builders is referred to by archaeologists as late woodland. And so this is a part of the late woodland people. We don't have a specific name for the effigy mound people. We just have this period of time. Basically, we refer to these as late woodland mounds, the late woodland people, or the effigy mound people.
Okay, and then the other thing would be, not all of the mounds were built as burial grounds. Some of them had cook areas in it or hearths. And what were some of the other things that were found or that where these mounds were made?
Yeah, most of the effigy mounds, there are evidence of burials, but there are some that had other objects or other things in them indicating ceremonies. Some, as you mentioned, actually had pits chuck full of food remains as though they were feasting pits, that is, put in here as a part of a feast that went along with the ceremonies. Many times there are arrangements of rocks, and we don't know exactly what that's about. But the rocks, arrangement of rocks are found in there, now known only to the people who built those mounds, obviously of great significance. As you mentioned, sometimes evidence of small fire pits, probably ceremonial fires.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mark. You can join in too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Or email at talk@wpr.org. Let's turn to Steve in Madison next. Hi, Steve.
Hi. I thought of another question while I was waiting here. We have a conical mound in back of our house that's actually associated with Elvium School and Elvium Park, and I think the indication is there was a burial in there. But what I've always wondered is, that is, I think, the highest point of ground. In other words, I think from that point on, the ground slopes down to Lake Monona. And I was just curious. I always have wondered whether at that time the area was totally prairie, so that if they built that mound up on this high spot, that the view would have been clear all the way down to Lake Monona rather than wooded as it is now, and of course developed with houses. But there's also the woods, Elvium Woods and whatnot there. Do you have any knowledge as to whether these mounds were, whether there was actually forest here or whether it was pretty much all prairie?
Yeah, well, you do have quite good indications of what the original vegetation was like. The early land surveyors who started plotting out Madison already in the 1830s made special note of vegetation. And then from that information, we can look at the model temperatures in the past and so on, and get a fairly good idea of what the natural environment would have looked like, you know, going back thousands of years in the changes that took place. But it very much looks like that the area was dominated by what we would call oak savanna, which is a combination of prairie. Mm-hmm. And you get some clumps of beautiful old oak trees, and you still see some around on old farms and so on. They're really quite lovely. But there was a substantial amount of prairie in this, which makes a great deal of sense. If they're building so many mounds, if it was wooded, that would be a very arduous chore to have to clear away. And to me, even antithetical to the exercise, you know, bringing out aspects of a natural environment by changing it, you know, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Instead, the Indian people were working with the natural environment and enhancing it, and destruction of anything seemed to be not the case. They were using the natural features to enhance their beliefs. So you're absolutely right that the that area undoubtedly would have been, you know, a prairie or, you know, a few trees, a few oak trees. There were a few wooded spots in Madison also. But like I said, a large part of it would have been oak savanna or prairie.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Thank you very much for calling. And Pat in Fremont, let's turn to you next. Hi, Pat.
Hi. My question is, I know there were Indian settlements around the Lake Poygan area, near where the Wolf River empties into that area of Lake Tustin. And I'm wondering if you know if there were really any mounds. I remember as a child helping clear the stones from the fields before the winter or the spring plantings. And at the edge of our land was wooded area that belonged to a neighbor, and you know, quite a ways in, you could see these mounds of rocks, but nothing in a specific shape.
Lake Poygan and had at one time, still has, that whole area was a center activity for people who built mounds, but also. It is one of the areas in which Native people congregated after 1200 AD for reasons that we are still investigating. After 1200 AD or so, we have a huge rearrangement of the human landscape. And it may be due to a great drought that took place about 1200 AD. But people are clustering only in certain parts of Wisconsin, Lake Koshkonong area, the La Crosse area, and Lake Poygan and that whole Oshkosh and Fox River Valley area.
A lot of water there.
And but there seems to be something else going on, because the people are clustering these areas are farmers. And these places may have given them some sort of environmental advantage.
Well, in some of the reading I did about the Wolf River Township, it mentioned the growing of rice. Is that?
Yeah, and wild rice is not growing of rice, but wild rice in that area was plentiful, and also Lake Koshkonong area too. Lake Koshkonong, when the first settlers came in, they described it as a meadow. It's shallow lake, and it was so thick with wild rice that it didn't look like a lake. It looked like a meadow that you had to canoe through. So, but the stones you're talking about are real interesting because there's actually quite a bit of literature on that. From the early days in your area there, the archaeologists had been investigating stone piles all over the place. And these apparently had not been piled up by early settlers, but are much more ancient. And they could have been a part of ancient agricultural field clearing. Or there may be some other reasons for that. But there is some literature on it, and I can certainly direct you to some interesting articles if you want to leave your name or address somehow.
Okay.
With Larry.
I'll tell you what, we'll put you on hold, and Jim can grab that information from you, Pat, and we'll give it to Bob, and Bob can send it off to you. Thanks for calling. Kim and Ladysmith, we turn to you next. Hi, Kim.
Hello. I'm very excited because my sister and I are going to Madison, and we're grabbing our aunt, and we are going through that area and looking for Indian mounds. And I know I want to go to the Lake Mendota area, but I'm still kind of wondering where's a good place to start maybe to go in search of these mounds.
Oh, several places. One is in my new book at the end of the book.
Yeah.
Is a list of places in which people can visit effigy mounds lake by lake.
Okay. I did take a lot of notes from the Indian Mounds of Wisconsin
yes.
that you had written.
Right.
Because I listened to that once.
And there is information in there. This is an updated one.
Okay.
Also, the Wisconsin Historical Society on their archaeological webpage has a listing of mounds. You can go right to the web and look at that. And alternatively... you can join us on September 18th in the afternoon on behalf of the Friends of Astolan State Park, which I have a great deal to do with. We are having a bus tour of the mounds of Madison.
Oh, fantastic.
And it's $25 per person, so it's pretty cheap. But we're going to spend about three and a half hours
mm-hmm.
visiting highlights of the mounds that illustrate many of the principles of mound building.
Sounds good.
And... you can register if you want, or anybody that's open to the public could just call me at 608-241-4958.
Okay. I will do that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. So 608-241-4958. Correct number there. All right. Thanks, Kim, for calling. And... believe me, if you want some great background, you want to learn a lot about the effigy mound landscape of Madison and the Four Lakes, so you really ought to take a look at Bob's new book. We turn to Darren in Madison. Darren, hello to you.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, so I live in Madison now, but I'm originally from southwestern Ohio, and growing up we used to always go to some of the effigy mounds in Ohio, like the Great Serpent Mound.
Right.
I always was told that Ohio had the most effigy mounds of any state, and I don't know if you want to contradict that statement there, but I was wondering if you could speak to the relationship between the effigy mounds in Ohio and in Madison, and I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks.
Yeah.
Sure.
And you have this in your book, by the way, as well.
I do. I have the Great Serpent Mound of Ohio there. Ohio has... spectacular earthworks. very famous, world famous earthworks that were built about 1,000 years before the effigy mound were built. Hopewell, very, very large geometric shapes, and so on. Actually, Ohio only really has a very few effigy mounds, a serpent mound. There's a bird. There's something called an alligator mound. But they are nowhere near as numerous as the mounds out here. That relationship is a real interesting one. They are a bit different, the effigy mounds there. They are a bit different, but deal with the same themes. And so we can interpret this one or two ways. One is sort of independent invention. They're coming from the same belief system and building these mounds, or that there was some sort of a belief system connection. Some years before the effigy mounds were being built, Ohio, the people of Ohio and their belief system heavily influenced Wisconsin. We see evidence of that all over the place. So there could be some connection there. But again, what happened here, for reasons that we are still researching, is that the concept of effigy mound building just exploded. These aren't rare. These aren't a few. Literally all over the landscape in many parts of the state.
Let's turn to Ernest in Vernon County. Hello, thank you for waiting.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. When I visit the mounds, the thing that amazes me is that one person's power or charisma could talk a group of people into stop doing what they're doing and build these mounds. That's just amazing that someone could, because they were so labor-intensive, plus they had to be supported by a society that could make up for their lack of time to hunt and gather food. So they must have been quite wealthy time-wise as far as food resources. But the one person that could say, this is what we need to be doing, and get a group of people to labor at that just amazes me.
Well, you know, what you're looking at is power religion, something that was essentially responsible for all the ancient monuments that we see that we find impossible to understand. You know, the pyramids, you know, are still we still struggle with, you know, how could this all be organized and so on. And we go just, you know, case by case, you know, Stonehenge, my God,
yeah.
You know, they're moving stones from hundreds of miles. You know, how did that work? You know, and so on. And in my book and in other works, too, I you know, that's the case I'm making here, is that these are religiously inspired exercises. And when people are doing things out of a religious motivation, that is, they have to do this. They have to do this, otherwise the world does not work. You have a whole different sense of what labor is and what, you know, time is. I have no doubt that the effigy mound construction was directed by religious people who were trained to know about these matters, and I'm convinced that this was the reasons for construction was a necessity in order to keep the world functioning, and the folks that were involved in the labor were either attuned specifically to that or understood that this is a ceremony, and you don't disrupt ceremonies, you know, because you're hungry. You know?
Just do it.
And with
that, we have to conclude.
I'm sorry.
I wish we had more time, Bob, but perhaps you'll come back and be with us.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'd love to have you back. Bob Birmingham, I hope you have a chance to look at his book. It's called Spirits of Earth, The Effigy Mound Landscape of Madison and the Four Lakes, published by University of Wisconsin Press. And we'll have him back and we'll talk again with him about the effigy mounds in his book. Just quickly, tomorrow, Elizabeth Fixmer of Madison introduces us to her new novel, Saint Training. Stay with us.